The committee of the whole will please come to order. Yes. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 9. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 9, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to economic analysis. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended a due pass. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Zwanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Semlek, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semlek.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that Senate File 7 do pass, and I will briefly explain the bill. Mr. Chairman, members of the body, half of the body, Wyoming County Commissioners participate in federal land use planning and major federal project environmental analysis as a cooperating agencies. The cooperating agency role is derived from the National Environmental Policy Act, which we have affectionately called NEPA, which calls on federal, state, and local governments to cooperate with the goal of achieving productive harmony between humans and the environment. Because Wyoming counties participate as a cooperating agency based on their special expertise, they are expected under the CEQ, which is the Council of Environmental Quality, under those regulations to provide data. This bill is about data collection. Provide data to the lead federal agencies, in this case, the BLM and the Forest Service, to be considered, that is considered to be within their special expertise. For a county, this specifically includes data pertaining to the socioeconomic conditions of the participating county, as this information is clearly within its special expertise. Members of the body, we did have this similar bill like this last year. It went through the two bodies and got downstairs and run into a little trouble. So for those members who have been here, the basic tenets of this bill are not going to be all that dissimilar or unfamiliar to you. What the bill does, and it's within the duties performed through the Division of Economic Analysis in 9-2-10-24, and what it's going to ask the Department of Economic Analysis to do is, and you'll find that on page 2, is to establish uniform criteria for collecting, compiling, analyzing, reporting, and distributing economic data for all Wyoming counties relative to the use of economic impacts to state and federal surface and mineral lands, including but not limited to the development of agriculture, grazing, minerals, timber, water, industrial resources, recreation, and energy production. And while it's not specifically in the bill, I would also submit that the value of this data would also find itself in economic development activities where companies coming into a county can take a look at the data that can be compiled under this Senate file and get an idea of the demographics of the populations and the types of businesses that are in that. So that's what this bill does. The data collection system will be on page 2, line 13. It talks about using a nationally recognized model for the compilation and the analysis of the data described in the paragraph above. And what is contemplated here, the accepted model that's being used is what's called the REMI model, which is regional economic model. So that's the REMI model that would be used. The Department of A&I currently collects some of this data, and in fact, many of the counties, when they are faced with decisions that are coming out of federal land management plans as to how those decisions might affect the socio and economic aspect of their communities, whether it's a reduction in activity on the forest or a lowering of the activity on AUMs on grazing or mining or whatever it is of things that we previously talked about. they will have an opportunity to get this data collected and be able to respond in those cooperating agency meetings with some reliable data. And that's really been kind of the shortcomings now. As I start to say, some of the counties are currently doing this. They do it at their own expense, and some of them have expended up to $100,000 to get the data to be able to go to these cooperating agency meetings with reliable data so that when the federal land managers offer some different types of alternative plans to their management schemes, that the counties be able to respond to and said, if you do this, it's going to affect us this way. They've been required to do this, to provide this data for them by themselves. The federal land managers are supposed to provide this data, and they have not done a very good job of that. And we've seen that in a previous bill a year ago when we did the rangeland assessment, that the federal land managers are not providing this information. As a result, the effect has been during the scoping phase of these federal land management decisions, information that is biased or incomplete is being used to make these decisions. So what is contemplated here in this bill is to ask the Department of Economic Analysis the Division of Economic Analysis under the Department of A&I to begin collecting this data for counties and making it available for them so that they will be able to respond to these federal land management decisions. So that is really pretty much the bill. The section 2 on page 3 talks about the authorization of one full-time position to the Department of A&I. The appropriation is now at $255,000, and that has been that was reduced from what was previously brought in the interim committee work. And, Mr. Chairman, there are a standing committee amendment and a committee to hold amendment from the good chairman of appropriations that will address this appropriation at the appropriate time. So that is, there's on the last page, page 4, there's a reporting requirement you find in section 3, and that is pretty much the bill. An important aspect for us to consider, I believe, to provide our counties with information so that we can continue to enjoy the type of multiple use of our public lands across Wyoming. And I would stand for any questions or defer to the chair to get the standing committee amendments moved with respect to the appropriation.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we were working this bill through Committee Number 2 Appropriations, in our testimony, there were a couple of things that we did. And so I would like for you to act on both of these amendments with a favorable eye. But what we did is on page 1, we changed it to positions because in the testimony we found that with the statistical analysis that there was going to be need in order to gather this information to allow for the governor's office to hire an additional at-will individual to collect the data to make certain that we had the information in a more expedient manner. So that was added, and so that's the reason for on line page 1, the reason to add from position to positions, and appropriations is plural. And then the other thing that we did was to change the funding from the general fund to the FNRPA account, which is the Federal Natural Resource Policy account. We put in a sunset date, basically, that any funds would revert on this project June 30th, 2012. So I would move Standing Committee 1 to Senate File 9 and ask for your favorable consideration and call for the question if there are no questions on this amendment.
Representative Goggles.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have a question on the amendment that changes on Section 2 from general to the Federal Natural Resources Policy account. That amount is $255,000. Then the amendment itself adds another $68,000 to Section 3, which comes out to about Looks like about $313,000. And I guess I would need some justification about the additional $68,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And that was the explanation. It's for that additional at-will employee for them. So they had one in the engrossed bill. This was adding an additional at-will employee to collect the data. And then the other thing is that we, in your committee of the whole amendment that's following this, will change it from the FINERPA account back to the general fund, because we found out that there wasn't a lot of money in that account to be taking it out of there for this project. So that's the action that will take place here.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe that the last explanation, I was not aware of the committee of the whole amendment, and by changing to the general fund and taking out the natural resource policy account is the more proper thing to do. That account is, while some of this matter in this bill does relate to NEPA-related projects, the FINERPA account in particular, what it's dedicated to, unless we added more money to that FINERPA account to address this specific issue, I really couldn't support that standing committee amendment. That account is pretty well dedicated now. We're even considering using the funds for statewide projects that has been discussed on this floor that we need to do something about, in particular the Wildlands project. So I don't have a problem with the standing committee amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I would move standing.
Madam?
Go ahead.
The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move committee of the whole amendment number one to Senate File 9 and ask for your favorable consideration.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
So, Mr. Chairman, that just puts the funding mechanism back into the general fund.
Yep. Just a second. I have to find my place here because Committee of the Whole Amendment number one has passed. We're back on the bill. Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wondering if the good representative from District 1 can help me out a little bit on just what data they're going to collect. It says a number of times in here that it's going to be collecting, compiling, analyzing, reporting, distributing data, and then it says all Wyoming counties, which tells me that whether or not a given county is it needs the data, you're going to collect it anyway. And the other thing is, I'm trying to get a handle on just what kind of data you're collecting. Is it data primarily from secondary sources, for example, the U.S. Statistical Crop and Livestock Reporting Service or the Bureau of Economic Analysis of the Department of Commerce? Or is it census data, you know, those kind of secondary sources, or is it going to involve the actual collection of primary and generating primary data that is not available in any secondary source at the present time? And I think that was kind of where, I don't remember if I asked this question last time this bill came to us, but that was an issue that I had at that time, and I still don't understand I think the logic, the way, you know, a lot of people might approach this is if you've got a given county that has a need for the data, you go to the secondary sources and get the data you should need that's available in the literature and build an analysis up for that particular county and then for that particular, alternative, well, the new policy that brings into question the need for the data, you know. And each one of these questions that bring in the need for data will call forth a different type of data that you need depending upon what the question is. And the thing it looks like here is that we're just generating a big database in case it's ever needed. Could you discuss that a little bit, please?
Chairman Childers?
Well, Mr. Chairman, having worked through a resource management plan by the Bureau of Land Management, that federal agency that manages lands, surface lands, and even in mineral involvement, basically that data, what is gathered, the mineral production on those federal lands, the agriculture production on those federal lands, and even recreation efforts on public lands. That data is gathered, and you determine the economic revenue that comes from those projects on an annual basis, and project it out over a long period of time. Part of the problem in the resource management plan that I had worked on, they only worked up roughly a 5-year economic analysis on the impacts on the public lands and said that was it. My concern was is they didn't project it out over a longer period of time. And some of their decisions that they were making as to whether they should continue operating the lands in the manner they're doing, allowing mineral development or allowing ranching and so forth, they did not provide the economics for their people, the federal agency people, to make rational decisions. And the purpose of our local governments involved in as a cooperating agency, they can provide that data and insist that the federal agencies included in those reports. And when they make a decision how they manage those lands, they have to consider that economic data. It gives a standing for the local governments. Number one, as a cooperating agency, if the agency ignores that economic data and proceeds with decisions that basically is ignoring that data, then that county also has a standing. If you appeal it to the IBLA, that is the Internal Board of Land Appeals, IBLA, yes. And they make decisions that basically whether the federal agency made the right decision or not. But it's very important to include that economic data so they can make an informed decision, because that's what the law requires. The Supreme Court has made that decision that the agencies only have to make an informed decision. And that's why it's so important to have the economic data. So I rise in support of the bill, and that's, in my opinion, the reasoning behind the economic data.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I remember this bill coming through last year, and then I got vetoed by the governor. And I've gotten some emails telling me to vote no, but from listening to the last speaker, this doesn't seem to be that big a deal, that we're going to help the counties gather some data. And I actually thought the last speaker gave a pretty good reason why we would help. But I did go find the governor's veto just to see what his concerns were. He's saying in this veto that it's more the function of the state, or the function of the counties, that the state should not be the one gathering and analyzing economic data on behalf of the counties. His other concern was that the recourse a county would have if the state incorrectly gathered or analyzed the data. And then lastly, he didn't like where we were taking the money from, but I think that's been resolved. I'm just curious about those first two questions. Are those valid concerns? Has anybody looked into those? Because I'm not quite understanding why he would care if the state collects it as opposed to the county. And this other question about recourse if we gathered incorrect data. Anyway, just curiosity, because somebody seems to be upset about this bill, and it didn't seem to be that big a deal.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, the bill is a big deal. It's a big deal in terms of this is something that this state needs to do. And the collection of the economic data to show whether it's a county or whether we collect the data as a state, the state as a whole, let's talk about this new wildland rule that's coming out that's going to affect what has the potential to affect, I guess, what, 500,000 acres or something in Wyoming? If we have the economic data to show that that has an impact on the state as a whole, that's very, very powerful information when it comes to working and being a player, a partner at the table with the federal government and how we deal with these issues. This is a great piece of legislation. So whether you gather the economic data county by county and then have the capacity to roll it together for a region or for several counties, or whether you need to roll it together and show the total impact on the state's economy as a whole, no matter what the issue is in dealing with the federal government, that is powerful information. Right now, the counties are going to the Federal Natural Resource Policy account, and they're hiring their own consultants to gather economic impact data. And so this, hopefully, through this process, we'll be eliminating that, and we'll actually have additional money in the Federal Natural Resource Policy account for other issues that deal with the federal government. So this is a very, very good piece of legislation, and it's going to help the counties. It's going to help regions. It would help the Bighorn Basin right now if we were using it, because even though it's up to us to show that whatever the feds do, it has an economic impact, not only on the federal lands, but on the county's economy as a whole. And that's where this data is so important to us. So this is a great piece of legislation, and I commend the Ag Committee for bringing it back and having a model that's set up, the funding's in place, and I think we're well on our way to even being stronger as a state and to help the counties individually be a better player at the table with the federal government.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I specifically wanted to address some of the questions from the representative from District 40. And what this is it's a regional economic model that is already being used by the state of Wyoming in the A&I department, but we only have it as an entire state. And what this bill will allow us to do is pick some priority counties, the ones that are facing big impacts from these federal decisions, and those would be the ones that we would get that data down to that granularity for county by county. But in the bill, you know, the idea is that at least once every 3 years, all of that data is refreshed and recalibrated. And this regional economic model, it actually does four major modeling approaches: input, output, general equilibrium, econometric, and economic geography. So I don't even pretend to understand what those terms mean, but I do know that it's a well-established model that's used nationwide and is being used by our state now on a whole state basis. And that what it does is it allows us to look at something like, what happens if we eliminate all logging from this county. How is that going to affect the rest of the economy? Or what happens if we severely constrain grazing? And so to be able to have that tool to say, if you do this to our county, here's what the actual economic results are likely to be, that's a really powerful tool that no county can do by themselves. It really does need to be a statewide effort and kind of a long-term rolling effort.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The debate is starting to come back to me. How much does it cost to get the model? Because the only money left is for the person running the model, as I understand it, but maybe I'm wrong. You don't get very sophisticated data collection for $65,000, in my opinion. I guess.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to answer three of the questions that I heard from the Speaker Pro Tem with respect to the veto message from a year ago. The governor's concern about should the state be collecting this data for the counties, and I guess that's my answer to that would be that. It's economy of scale if we do that. One county up in the northwest corner of the state invested about $100,000 just on one data collection to deal with one specific forest management update. So, you know, we can certainly streamline the people's resources here and be greater steward of the public trust, I think, if we combine these efforts and provide kind of a clearinghouse to the Department of Economic Analysis for that. Could there be any recourse from the counties, back to the state, if the data wasn't collected? Well, it's not like there's a lot of new data being collected here. It's really kind of the same type of information that we've had for a number of years that has come out of this division, and you know, certainly the individual counties might have some closer and clearer perspective as to what that data is in terms of its accuracy, but they certainly can add to that information before they use it for the purpose that's intended in this bill. And the third question with respect to the appropriation, what the appropriation is $255,000 plus the $68,000 for the part-time employee. Out of that $255,000, I think the testimony was that about $175,000 that was going to be used for the purchase of the software for the REMI model. And the other portion of that $255,000 for the first employee, then after the testimony came into the Appropriations Committee, that really kind of some concern, I think, on the part of the director of the Division of Economic Analysis, somewhat concerned about whether or not he'd be able to do that, although we did not hear that testimony when we heard the bill earlier. But so the Appropriations Committee responded to that and added that other position. So hopefully I've been able to at least give you my perspective of those questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The chair is interested to know if there's anybody here that wants to speak against this bill. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 9 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Ed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I haven't done privilege of the floor yet this year, but I wanted to because we have a member of the body who today is his last day, and he sits behind me, and I thought it would be nice if we could acknowledge and send him off on what is to be an endeavor of a lifetime for the Patterson family. I think we are all so very excited for them, for his wife and his children, and so let's all wish him well, bid him farewell. Safe travels, my friend, and come soon.
Have a great trip, Representative Patterson. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 62. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 62, introduced by the Natural Resource Funding and Act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Large Project Funding Act. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yeagie, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, signed representing McComey, Chairman. It was further referred to Committee Number 2, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Patterson, Stewart, Wallace, signed representing Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Mr. Chairman McComey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with the recommendation that Senate File 62 do pass. And, Mr. Chairman, I will turn that the explanation of this over to the gentleman that's chairing the Oversight Committee for this particular series of projects. It's a good gentleman from way up in the Cody County country.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, it's Park County and Cody, Wyoming. Ladies and gentlemen, if you look in your end basket, there is a color handout for you. That's titled WWNRT 2011 Large Projects. And to just give you a very brief history of the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust is established in 2005, and it's basically addressed to help wildlife in the state of Wyoming and habitat. As I said, started in 2005, and the law is set up that any projects over $2,000 have to be considered by a select committee established by the legislature. Now, the small projects and large projects, if you'll look at the handout that you have, to help explain a little bit what they go through on small and large projects, just to show on the first, the Golden Willow Conservation Easement, the sponsor is... I won't mention that on the floor. You can read that. But the purpose is to conserve native grassland and riparian habitat. Benefits are deer, antelope, short-tailed grouse, grassland birds, and help maintain a family operation. Total cost of the project is $2,075,000. The request by the group that put this project together is $415,000. And the review initials are just the people that go out on site and look at this project. And I want to emphasize that out of the 9-man board, two people have to go out and physically look at the project. So it isn't that the board doesn't know an awful lot about the project. And I'll tell you a little bit more in just a minute. And in this case, they're proposing to grant them $350,000. And look at the leverage, 4.90. What that is, and it means for every dollar the state puts in from the trust fund, almost $5 is put in by somebody else. The other thing that is done by this board is, besides making sure that there are two people that physically look at the projects, all of the applications, all of the board members have to go through and review them, and giving them a preliminary ranking, 1, 2, 3, whatever, based on the selection criteria. And then the board gets together and they get a combined or an aggregate score, with 9 being the optimum score and 27 being the least desirable. Basically, what they're doing is they weigh those and prioritize all those projects, whether small or large. And if a project approaches $250,000 or $200,000, they will go ahead and bring it to the legislature. So there's no doubt whatsoever that the legislature considers large projects. What this bill does, Senate File 62, we bring you 17 projects for a total of about $5.8 million. That money does not come from the general fund. That money comes from the trust fund operating account. That trust fund operating account is combined of interest off the trust fund, which is about 90 some odd million dollars, and an appropriation. And until we reach the level of what the trust fund is supposed to be at, which is supposed to be $200 million, this will probably continue to be done, that we provide money in addition to what the interest is. You'll note throughout this project that in most cases the leverage approaches 5. There are some smaller, but some of those that are smaller are continuation of projects and had been done the previous year, or even the previous year to that. The board is very good about taking a look at these projects and trying to maintain a high leverage. Now, I could go through and discuss each one of these projects, but the summary on the handout that I gave you, as well as the brief description in each one of the bills, covers those quite adequately. And I think with that, I would step back, and if there are any questions about the project, if not, I'll call for a question on the bill.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to add one other thing real quick and then call for the question. But if a combined project, otherwise some of these projects start to run 2 or 3 years concurrently, they will bring these projects to us. Even though they don't meet the threshold, they still bring these projects to the legislature for approval. And with that, if there's no questions, wait a minute.
Thank you. Are you ready for the question?
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, you guy in the red jacket. Representative Varanus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are these just conservation easements, or do they imply any public access, too?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely not. There are projects just to improve habitat. Good example is in Yellowtail Dam up in northwest Wyoming, where they removed Russian olive and invasive species, and basically created more wetland. And if you read through these projects, there are a number of them that are not conservation easements, and over the 5 years we've had, I believe it was $25 million invested to date that they don't give exactly how many were conservation easements and how many were others, but the habitat improving for wildlife and so forth. If there are no questions, I'll call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 62 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate file 62 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 115. The reading clerk will read the bill. Oh, sorry, I got ahead of myself. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 73. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 73, introduced by the Mineral Committee, an act relating to environmental quality regarding municipal waste, solid waste landfills. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer, Dan, Zwanitzer, Dave, signed Representative Lockhart, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, excused, Edmonds.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 73 do pass. And I'd like to turn the explanation of the bill over to the good representative from House District 46. And there is a proposed amendment, so we'll take that in at your leisure.
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Representative Throne.
Just before the explanation of the bill, I would like to withdraw my proposed amendment. Just to
the committee.
The Committee of the Whole amendment.
But it's, huh? If there's no objection, that Committee of the Whole amendment will be withdrawn. Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, I'd like to move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 73 and ask for a favorable aye vote on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chairman Lockhart, you need to move the amendment, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to the bill and turning its explanation over to the good representative from House District 46.
Okay, now Representative Moniz.
Thank you. We just added some additional wording. If you notice on page 4, line 11, After A, delete the balance of that line, and then on page 4, lines 12 through 14, we deleted that entirely. On page 5, line 14, after Romanet 5, delete the balance of the line and insert the nature of the contaminants in the surface or groundwater affected by the municipal solid waste landfill, including whether a contaminant is naturally occurring or man-made, and period. With that, I guess I would ask for any feedback or stand for the question.
Representative McComey.
Thank you. Could you give us a little explanation of why you felt it was necessary to delete that language?
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The language deletion on page 4, lines 1 through 14, as we worked through the language in committee, it became clear that this was surplusage. In addition, we had the statutory reference there on page 14. You reference this program contained in 35, or the report required under 3511.522, and then in the repealers, you delete that exact section and the reporting requirement that we refer to. So it just got confusing, and we just figured it was better to take it out.
The question, you've heard the motion of the standing committee member. Are you ready for the question? You are. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just if I could read through the what this bill is about. It involves the environmental quality, providing for a municipal solid waste landfill lifetime permits, requiring annual reports, providing definitions, establishing priorities for municipal solid waste landfill remediation, and providing for orphan landfill site remediation, making conforming amendments, and expanding the use of the previously appropriated funds from the environmental assessments, and providing for an effective date. And if I could refer, Mr. Chairman, to the previously appropriated funds in 2006, a total of $9,270,000 was appropriated to the Department of Environmental Quality to provide monitoring and planning grants to determine the nature and extent of contamination associated with the landfills. Currently, there is approximately $4,500,000 remaining from that appropriation that was not awarded to, that has not been encumbered by some of the applicants around the state that have not asked to be reimbursed for that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, if I could read just a little bit from a report that we received from the Department of Environmental Quality under the grant that we just referred to. The department had evaluated monitoring of 114 municipal solid waste landfills. A number of the facilities have not yet applied for reimbursement, and additional work has been needed to further assess the nature of the extent of the contamination of these landfills. They believe that 76 of the 114 landfills investigated now have a minimum number of wells needed to detect the release. Based on statistical evaluations, there is evidence of contamination at 73 or 96% of the 76 landfills. Contaminant concentrations exceed groundwater protection standards at 69% or 91% of the 76 landfills. Of the remaining 38 landfills, 5 local governments chose not to install wells, and additional data is needed at another 33 before determination regarding groundwater impacts can be made. So based on that, Mr. Chairman, there's a remaining balance, or there as a potential remaining balance of $1,750,000 in this account. With that, our goal is for the Department of Environmental Quality to establish a priority list on how we should further deal with these issues. It also provides for a lifetime permitting process that many of the cities are very glad to see. And finally, the bill requires the department to evaluate the status of orphan landfills in the state. Orphan landfills, Mr. Chairman, being landfills that nobody claims. The best we can tell, there's maybe 12 of those in the state. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for questions.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if the Minerals Committee had any heard any testimony on, and maybe they're already doing this, but the operators filing this, it looks to me like a pretty extensive annual report. Are they already doing that and we're just putting this in statute, or is this annual report that needs to be filed by the operator every year, is that a new requirement on our landfill operators right now, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question. They have reports that are required and have been in the past. This just clarifies in various steps so that everybody understands what's needed in those reports, and it is on an annual basis, and that's the expectation. It'll continue annually.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and just to follow up on that, right now what we have is every, and I believe it's every 4 years, they file a very extensive report on their landfill. And what this will do is create a 25-year permit for those landfills that qualify. And then each year it's just an annual review, which is a much less burdensome process just to come in. And the operators I've talked to and some of the engineers in the testimony we also heard was this is a much preferable way to do this, much less burdensome for our districts and our municipalities.
Chairman Lockhart. All right. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 73 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 73 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was checking to make sure that... Privilege of the floor, please.
Go ahead.
I was checking to make sure that the people I was introducing were here this time. Ladies and gentlemen in the gallery, to my left are the MBA students from the University of Wyoming who've come over to observe us in our deliberations. Would you give them a warm legislative welcome? Mr. Chairman, while I'm still here, would you move House Bill 91 to below House Bill 33?
Thank you, sir. Representative Laux.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor, please.
Yes, sir.
I want to draw your attention to a group of young people right up here from Casper, Wyoming, Crest Elementary School, fifth graders, trying to engage with the government process. Their teacher, Rick Black, is on the left side, I believe. If you give him a big hand, please.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 115. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 115, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to the operation of motor vehicles, DUI, child endangerment fines. This bill was sent to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Bonner, Kennedy, McKim, Peterson, Korberg, Vronish, Sponsor Dave, Conflict, Botten, sign representing Korberg, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File Number 115 do pass, and I move the explanation of the bill over to the good Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A very simple bill. A few years ago, you'll see who the sponsor is of this bill on the front. He passed a bill a few years ago that made it a crime, well, actually an accelerated crime, if you had a child in the car and you were drunk driving. However, here was the small glitch in it. He put in there that on a first conviction, it was imprisonment for not more than 1 year. He forgot to stick in the potential for a fine. So what was happening was people were getting convicted of it, and the only option the judge had was jail time, when in some situations you either wanted to do just a fine or you wanted to do both a fine and a jail time. So almost on all of our crimes, we always have it worded as jail time or a fine or both, and it was just a small glitch that got left out, and it got discovered recently, and so the good senator from down the hall decided to bring this to fix that. And if there's there's questions.
Representative Botten.
Mr. Chairman, in accordance with the rules, declaring conflict.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Korberg's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 115 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 115 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 55. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 55, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to subdivisions, subdivision, perimeter, partition, fencing. This bill was sent to Committee Number 5, Agricultural State and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Davison, Eklund, Laux, Moniz, Semlek, Swanitzer, Dan, no, Hunt, signed Representative Semlek, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Semlek?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation that Senate File Number 55 do pass. I'll explain the bill. This is also a pretty simple bill. I can tell you, though, it has, over the last couple of years, and some different approaches to try to deal with this problem, has run into some problems on this floor. And so we've brought back another effort that really combined the interest of the folks in this state who represent people who sell land and those organizations out here in the state that have responsibility for looking after the agricultural interest. They got together this summer and they brought this bill to the Joint Interim Ag Committee. And what this bill does in 1128-106, this is in the construction and maintenance of partition fences. It goes into under Section B, and it says that for subdivisions as defined by in that section there that defines what subdivisions mean, the subdivider shall be responsible for the construction of the perimeter fence. And this was a good amendment that came in on the body across the way. That's why this is engrossed. The cost of the perimeter fence shall be paid for by the parties in accordance with the subsection A of this section. And up above there, you can see, beginning there kind of on line one, well, actually on line 16, the previous page, it says that the persons may require the persons to, okay, belong, let's go back. The owner of any lawful fence, which is or becomes a partition fence separating the owner's land from that belonging to some other person, may require that person to pay for one half of what it would or does actually cost to construct the partition fence. So here's the partnership that we have. It'd be up to the subdivider for the construction of the fence, but the cost will be shared. based at what I just explained. And that is, and then it also, there's some language in there that says about the adjoining landowner should not be liable for any damages caused by or arising from livestock pastured on the adjoining land that may wander into the subdivided land. And there was, you know, there's been some talk over the years about some of these larger tract subdivisions, if they wanted the neighboring livestock interest to be able to graze there, to keep the weeds and the and graze the 4-H's on that land. You know, I guess you put a gate in the partition fence and allow them to do that. This doesn't preclude that. So, again, it seemed to have, it did have the support based on the testimony of the committee of the representatives of the ag organizations and the representatives of the realtors. They got together and said, this is what will work for us. So I guess we'll ask if it'll work for you. So that's the explanation of the bill. I'll try to answer any questions.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question, if this was discussed and also sort of on the construction of this. I understand the concept of large tract subdivisions, but my question is, what about a tract of land that's subdivided into smaller parcels and then later sold to a third person? And then that subsequent purchaser puts up their own fence or desires to have a fence put up. This seems to impose that obligation back to the subdivider who may be long gone. I don't know if that was discussed or if maybe my interpretation of that's a little too open.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to make sure I'm reading the first two sentences beginning on page 2, line 13, correctly. The first sentence says that the subdivider must take the initiative. Is that what it is? The initiative to get the fence built, but when it gets around to building it, they split the cost 50-50. Is that okay? And then is there some other elsewhere in the statute where it specifies what the standards are for the fence so that the subdividers, you know, if they wanted a fancy brick one or something like that, that the agricultural landowner didn't have to chip in for 50% of a lavish fence or what?
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What would be contemplated is that it would be in 1128.102, what's considered to be a legal fence generally in Wyoming, and that is a good question, and that's what got us in trouble with this bill before, is that we came down to the Ag Committee with a 6-foot high, 10-foot or 10-wire fence, and the good counselor, the former good counselor of the Agriculture Committee, just kind of got on us off of that, so we backed up. So it would contemplate what I would consider to be one of the legal fences, and the Romanet 1 under this section of the law would be three spans of barbed wire, not to be more than 15 inches or less than 10 inches apart, and have a rail on the top. So if that's considered to be a Wyoming legal fence, then that would be the minimum requirement. With respect to the other question, I guess way I'd answer that is that when the subdivision plat is produced and accepted by the county commissioners, the perimeter fence would be the fence that would apply in this bill. At least that would be my understanding. The title, subdivision perimeter fencing partitions. So what other subdivision that might occur within that would be partition fences within the perimeter fence. So I think it would just apply to the perimeter fence. So that would be my explanation. And if that's not correct and there's a problem with that, we'll try to deal with that later.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I read, most of this is existing law except for the B that has been put in. And what you've tried to do really is kind of define a little more clear in B, just exactly how what's in A, existing law already, is going to be applied. Is that not correct?
Chairman Simlick?
Yes, that is correct. The existing language in 1128.106 talk about what constitutes a lawful fence and what's involved in a petition fence, how we share the cost of the between the owners of the two properties on either side of the petition fence. So that's existing law. Section B just goes in and talks about those created subdivisions, the perimeter fence, the initiative to construct the perimeter fence on these subdivisions will be done by the subdivider, and half the cost be paid for by the adjoining landowner.
Chairman McComey.
And then the other little thing I see there is basically saying that if you construct that perimeter fence but you haven't constructed it well enough to keep livestock from an adjoining property out, you cannot sue that person because they got through your fence. Is that correct?
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's what's contemplated in lines 17 through 20. That's correct.
Representative Greer.
I may have my own question answered, but I'll still ask it again. But my concern is if you have a subdivision that is very close to town or in farm areas where there are no fences anyway, so we're going to require these perimeter fences to go up. And I was just thinking of an example of this right on the edge of town, and it was going to require a perimeter fence to go around where there never has been one existing. It's very impractical to do. Then I just realized in that particular example that parcel of property was annexed into the city and then subdivided. But all the same, I'm still a little concerned with this bill. I like the concept if a subdivider is going to require a partition fence to go up at the subdivider or even the subsequent owner of that land be required to pay for all of the fencing. And then I also like the concept that they cannot hold an adjoining landowner liable if the livestock trespass. And if I can say it a little bit better, is this don't require a subdivider to put up a fence, but if a subdivider wants to keep the livestock off his land, he or she has to pay for all of that fence. And I don't really like this bill the way it's drafted.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you've got attractive unbroken land and somebody goes in the middle of attractive unbroken land, an owner, and wants to put in a cornfield and start growing corn, then that land's going to have to be fenced so that, and it's a fence out state, and that land's going to have to be fenced so that the livestock can't get in. And in that case, the cornfield guy can build the fence around the cornfield, and 1128.106 will require his neighbor to pay half the fence because it's a partition fence. Now, the only difference here is instead of it being a cornfield requiring a partition fence, it's a subdivision. And we have these instances where subdivisions are put in. There's nothing done about the fencing. It's a fence out state, but the subdivider doesn't fence out because he doesn't have to. The individual property owners don't get it done. And the result is that you got cattle, typically cattle, we'll leave the axe out of this. You've got cattle in the subdivision wandering through people's yards and causing all kinds of problems. And then this huge disagreement flusters up. Well, if it's a cornfield, clearly the cornfield owner fences the livestock out, but it's a partition fence, so the adjoining property owner pays half. All this says that, well, if it's a subdivision instead of a cornfield, let's have the subdivider build a perimeter fence so it gets done because it needs to be done. There's all kind of hate and discontent if it doesn't get done. And the adjoining landowner still pays half, the same way it would if it were a cornfield instead of a subdivision. The subdivider can pay for half the perimeter fence. He's responsible for putting it in. And he just builds that into the cost of the property when he sells parcels in the subdivision. Now, what kind of fence does he have to build? He has to build a legal fence. And the legal fence is defined in 1128-102. And you can read it for yourself. But if he builds a legal fence, then he's complied with his obligations. Now, if you look at 1128-108, there's liability for the owner of a livestock whose livestock breach a legal fence. And so if he puts in a legal fence and the cows are knocking it down, or there's it got some kind of, they call them breachy animals, if you have bulls, usually, or the ones that just put their head down and go through a fence, that's a breachy animal. That shifts liability for containment of that animal back on the livestock owner. And so now you've got a perimeter fence with a legal fence. That legal fence has been, we're the ones that did it as the legislature. In all our wisdom, we figured out that with a legal fence, it'll turn cows and keep them out. If you've got some that are, for some reason or another, and there are animals like that, breach that fence, as long as it's a legal fence, then the liability shifts to the livestock owner, and the livestock owner's got to do whatever is needed to contain an animal that won't be turned by a legal fence. So I hope that helps. I think it's the right thing to do. It just puts the subdivision developer, who when the subdivision's being built, it collectively represents all those subdivided parcels. It puts him in the same position of building a fence that the guy with the cornfield would have. And he's entitled to build a partition fence and bill the neighbor half the cost of the fence. But he doesn't have to build any more than a legal fence. He shouldn't need any more than a legal fence. And if there's animals that legal fence isn't turning, that liability shifts to the owner of the animals. If it's a legal fence and it is turning them, then there won't be a problem. And this is the law anyway. I think the adjoining landowner is not liable for damages caused by livestock that may wander onto the subdivided land. Now, he is liable if they breach the legal fence. If there's no fence there, or a gate gets left open, or something like that, or the fence isn't maintained and repaired, then as long as that was complied with, he's not going to have any liability for his livestock wandering in there.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Semlick's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 55 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion passes. Senate File 55 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Esquivel.
Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen of the 61st and the South Gallery, we have some more UW students. They're part of the Multicultural Leadership Initiative, and they're with Ryan Lance. Please welcome them to the House.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 65. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 65, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to livestock regarding animal remedies. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agricultural, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass. Hayes, Blake, Camel, Eklund, Hunt, Laux, Moniz, Semlex, Monitzer, Dan, No, Davison. Signed, Representative Semlick, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File D-65 do pass, and I will explain the bill. Sooner or later, you will just say yes because you're tired of seeing me up here. And I apologize for that. Animal Remedy, Senate File 65, I will tell you that the last time that these statutes had been they were established in 1929, and there's been no amendments to them all the concurring years from there. So this is, as you can see in Section 1, we created new sections in the animal remedies from 1117-201 and 1117-209, and those are the sections that you see, and the definitions are on the first seven pages. But I want to call your attention to bottom of page 2. I don't think it's necessary to go through all these definitions, but I think it's important for you to understand really what this bill is about, to look at the definitions on Romanet 3 on line 20 on page 2. That is the definition of an animal remedy. Any drug, combination of drugs, proprietary medicine, biological product, and combination of drugs and other ingredients other than for food or cosmetic purpose, which is prepared or compound for animal use except as exempted by the director. So that's what this bill is really all about, the Senate file. So the first six pages or so are just definitions. If you have some questions about any of those, we can certainly talk about them. But I will try to, I'll just kind of walk you quickly through the bill and then kind of explain what the need for this bill is, and then I will stand for questions. 1117-203 on page 7 talks about the powers and duties of the director, promulgation rules. This is kind of the common language that we see in these types of enactments. Some refusal. The director may refuse to register these products. The director may sample, going on page 8. The director may conduct, and this is the director of the Department of Ag, may conduct any investigations, may refuse registration. So this is a model law that's really come out of the state to the north and east of us. And so this is pretty much model language that they've used. Director on top of page 9 shall cause animal remedies which are found not to believe to comply with the article to be withheld from sale pending compliance. So there's some language in here about alteration and misbranding. Animal remedy can be detained if it's altered or misbranded. Page 10, the director may promulgate rules and regulations for animal remedies necessary for the sufficient enforcement of this article. And then some registration requirements in 1114-204 and the fees. And we'll talk about them that is on page 11. The current fees are $5, and that's what's contemplated here in section B on page 11, that those fees do move to $20 per product. I don't know how, I think those $5 fees have been in since almost the beginning of the act. I'm not positive about that. There's some labeling language. And labeling requirements on the top of page 12. And then 1117-206 on 13, professional supervision required for the preparation and packaging of remedies. I did ask some questions about this. It seemed like it was rather onerous, some of the requirements here, but the testimony was that they're currently doing that, so really no big change there. Page 14, right of access to the establishment and information ranked in manufacturing, sampling, and analysis. This is not uncommon language that we find in our feed standards in the state, too. We have the right, I believe, to go into elevators and do some examinations within those places. Important part of this bill, in my opinion, gave me a little more comfort in considering the major changes to the animal remedies. The 24-page bill is really found on page 16, where it talks about all the exemptions from this act, and that says in Romanet E, it talks about all animal remedies that are manufactured and distributed under registration from and under the supervision of the U.S. Department of Agriculture are in compliance with regulation shall not be considered adulterated or misbranded. So there's 1,527 registered products in this state, and over 14 of them comply with USDA standards. So there's not all that many that really that are affected under this act. The revenue contemplated here, it was going to be about $30,000. That's the $20 times the 1,527 products that are in the state. The current revenue is $7,600. This will move to $3,540. Number of Wyoming businesses affected are three, and the number of registered Wyoming products, there's seven. And the main purpose for the department bringing this bill is that they've told us that there's a lot of conflicts with the remedy law with the commercial feed law. So this separates those two, and that's really what the difference, that's why this act is being proposed. So that's a relatively quick overrun. It's really a consumer protection for people out there buying these remedies to make sure that they're either approved by the USDA so that the unscrupulous manufacturers aren't providing products that have no effect under the remedy. And there's also a food safety issue here that products going into our animals are safe. So that is the bill. I'll entertain any questions if I can.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back when I was a kid, when I worked for the Department of Agriculture, I did the inspection on animal remedies. You've cleaned up the bill. I wish it had been done when I was working there. You certainly brought it up to date, and I would urge the adoption.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Semlich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 65 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. All right. Senate File 65 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 10. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 10, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to protection of livestock animals. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Camel, Eklund, Laux, Moniz, Semlich, Zwanitzer, Dan. No, Davison, Hunt. Signed, Representative Semlich, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 10 do pass. And there is a standing committee amendment, which I will move and explain at the proper time. Mr. Chairman, you're going to see two proposals coming, this one and Senate File 100, that we've worked on over the last 3 or 4 years to try to deal with some of the concerns that we have with protection of livestock animals. We'll find that in Senate File 10. We have another proposal coming here in Senate File 100 that really deals with the small animals. But what we had some concern about, and the reason we're bringing you this bill is that as people move into the state and the interest of people from out of state into what our customary traditional agricultural practices are, that we want to make sure that they're not construed as being cruel to animals. So the first section of this, I guess I should say that this is in 1129.115, which is under the protection of domestic animals in 29. Then we create this new section, use of agriculture and livestock management practices. And what we want to lay out here is some of the practices that livestock producers across the state do on a regular basis, their management of their management practices, of their livestock. And we want to say that nothing in this chapter prohibits some of these activities that for the kind of the unknowing mind might seem to be cruel. And they're really what we say in that language on Romanet 1 is that the use of Wyoming's industry accepted agriculture, livestock management practices, or other commonly practiced animal husbandry procedures used on livestock as defined in there are not considered, they don't need the protection. These are the things that we do. Romanet 2, a Wyoming license, again, we're talking about nothing in this chapter will prohibit Romanet 2, a Wyoming licensed veterinary from treating a livestock animals authorized by the Wyoming Veterinary Medical Practice Act. You might not think we'd need to do this, but there's more scrutiny all the time over what we've considered to be normal management practices for the last 100 years in this state on livestock, and there's just more concern all the time that we'd better put something in statute to protect our industry because these are accepted management practices. Romanet 3 talks about rodeo. Any rodeo event employing animal care practices generally accepted within the rodeo industry. They won't be. Nothing in this act will prohibit that or any person from humanely destroying a livestock animal. So that is, we want to set those aside. And you get into 1129.101, Mr. Chairman, there is a series of definitions in there, and I will say that there is a committee, the whole amendment, that's going to come in and change a lot of what the committee did in our work of this bill, and that really pretty much takes care of everything else in the bill, except for the standing committee amendment, Mr. Chairman, which I'll move at this time, standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate file 10 and ask for your favorable consideration. There is what we did in the drafting this bill in several places on page 8 and 9, we left out animal before livestock. So we've added that in this standing committee amendment. So that is really all we have in that. So I'd ask, I'll call the question on the standing committee amendment this time.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Why don't you move
it? Those opposed, no. The standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Committee of the whole will stand at ease for till the sound of the gavel. It's just to get a corrected amendment copy out. The committee of the whole will come back to order. We're still on the bill. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Here's what happened. Representative Davison had an amendment. She was the only person on it. It was a committee of the whole amendment. There's a subsequent amendment by Representative Wallace that deletes Representative Davison's amendment. But Representative Davison wasn't here to move her amendment. So there's a corrected copy of the amendment currently being distributed that Representative Yagi can now move and then withdraw so that then we can go to Representative Wallace's amendment, and that's why we took a break.
Representative Yagi.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to move second reading or first reading amendment to Senate File 10, and I'd like to withdraw it.
If there's no objection, Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has been withdrawn. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move Committee of the Whole Number 2 and ask for your favorable consideration. In the discussions and the collaboration that went on in figuring out how to deal with establishing the livestock and then also making sure that we didn't leave a void in the pet animal. A couple of things that I was concerned about that I am proposing in this bill. So if you look on page 2, Chairman Semlich went through all of these clauses where we are protecting the accepted management practices that we currently do in ranching and rodeo and et cetera. But you'll notice that right across on the facing page on page 3 is this long string of, or not long string, but a couple of definitions that in the wrong hands or the wrong motivations might be used to try to prohibit or impede exactly those practices that we're protecting in kind of a vague way on the other side when you're talking about burn, brand, disfigure, earmark, mutilate, castrate. You know, those things were very problematic to me. Besides which, these are the livestock statutes. And what these definitions are really talking about is more properly and is, in fact, already dealt with in animal cruelty statutes in 6-3-203. So what this amendment does is, first of all, it removes the first two definitions, the definition for cruelly mistreat and the definition for cruelly neglect on this statute, because it's already taken care of in our criminal cruelty statutes. And then it puts more clarity and definition into the what a livestock animal actually is, because in a number of states there have been attempts and even successful attempts at animal activist organizations to, for instance, classify horses as companion animals and to try to impede animal use in various different ways. So in order to address that, we leave in number A, which begins on line 19 of page 3, saying that a livestock animal is any bovine, including domestic bison, equine, swine, sheep, goat, domesticated camelid animal, ratite bird, rabbit, or poultry, and deletes used for food or fiber. Then in paragraph B, right below that, says that a livestock animal means any animal used or harvested for any good and proper purpose, including but not limited to food, fiber, fur, leather, medical research, and byproducts, or C, any animal used or trained for work, sport, exhibit, or entertainment. Making sure that definition includes all of the animals that we might keep, use for as livestock. Then on page 5, down on line 23 is a place where we have used those definitions, and what we do there is say where the bill had been written to say when any person arrested under this act is in charge of any vehicle drawn by or containing any livestock animal, cruelly treated, mistreated or cruelly neglected, we delete all of that language and just say as defined in Wyoming Statute 6-3-203, which are the animal cruelty criminal statutes. And then we do that again on page 6, line 15. And then the only, we kind of follow that through the bill, and where those places where they had inserted these terms that had been defined, we just point back to the 6-3-203 statutes. And then finally on page 9, beginning on line 19, what we do there is a couple years ago we passed a piece of legislation that gave the livestock board 3 options when they needed to dispose of an animal. They can sell them, they can send them to slaughter, or they can destroy the animal humanely. So what this does is this is the area of the bill which is talking about what happens when they have become responsible for an animal and the owner either has not bonded that animal or has refused to renew the bond. And in that case, when the board needs to dispose of the animal, that it is done as defined in that statute 1124-101A(4). So that is the Committee of the Whole Amendment, and I would answer any questions. And if there are no questions, I would call for the question.
All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Is there any other discussion on the bill? The question having been called, all those in favor of Senate File 10, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 10 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 119. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 119, introduced by Senator Johnson, an act relating to real estate brokers and salesmen. This bill was referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, which recommended that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparyk, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan, Swanitzer, Dave, signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
Okay, you have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Vice Chairman Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 119 do pass. And I'd further move the standing committee amendment to Senate File 119. And for the explanation of both, I'd turn it over to the good representative from Fremont County.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been informed that I stand between you and the exit. Not quite that fast. Okay, folks, what this bill does is it is Senate File 119, Real Estate Brokers and Salesmen Revisions. The bill has been worked for nearly 6 months by both the Real Estate Commission and the Real Estate Association. When we had this bill in Minerals Committee, I found it very interesting. There was no one else besides the commissioner and the representative of the Real Estate Association there besides myself and the filer of the bill from the other side. So there's not a lot of controversy here. It is a lengthy bill, and I'll try to be brief. I'll be happy to try to answer any questions. It's been essentially 40 years since there's been major revisions in these statutes. There has been numerous Band-Aid solutions over the years that the bill fixes most of these inconsistencies caused by some of these Band-Aids. One example is the definitions are now at the beginning of the bill and not scattered throughout the statutes in different sections. This makes it easier to follow. They even were thoughtful enough to put them in alphabetical order. So for the bill itself, the definitions are on pages 3 through 18. The bill further changes the terms broker, associate broker, and salesman to licensee. The bill inserts responsible before broker, where their statute is specifically referring to the head broker of a real estate office. The bill makes the statute consistent in the requirements for obtaining the three different licenses, the responsible broker, the associate broker, and the salesman. Corrects a conflict in the statute that deals with designated licensees. A transaction manager does not need to be appointed immediately if both parties are represented by either a responsible or an associate broker. The bill makes 6 policy changes. Number 1, funds holder. Defines what a funds holder is and then specifies the acceptable use of a funds holder for earnest money. That's on page 7. Degree in real estate. Specifies that an individual with a degree in real estate may qualify for an associate broker's license, but still has to have 2 years' experience in the business prior to qualifying for a responsible broker's license. That's on page 25. Civil penalties. Increases the fine for the first violation to not more than $2,500 and the second to $5,000. That's on page 41. On record retention, specifies what records must be retained by the responsible broker. All documents reduced to writing, whether the transaction closed or not, shall be retained for 7 years. That's on page 53. On page 54 is the Real Estate Recovery Fund. Increases the amount a consumer can apply for from $4,000 to $10,000. With that, at this time, I'll call for a question, I'll explain the Standing Committee Amendment, which on page 8, line 12, deletes commission and changes it to the word compensation. And throughout the statute, commission had been used to define the commission, but it also was a way to define the commission they received for compensation in a real estate sale. So this first Standing Committee Amendment corrects the one on page 8, line 12, deletes commission because it's referring to a commission for a fee for the real estate sale and changes it to compensation. So I'll call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I now move Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 119. Upon further consideration by our staff and the other folks working on this, they found that same issue 2 pages worth of more times throughout the legislation. So this Committee of the Whole Amendment, it's 2 pages, it goes in and defines when it's referring to receiving money or funds for the completion of a real estate transaction, is changing that comment from commission to compensation. Where commission is referring to the real estate commission, it's not changing anything there. So I call for the question on Committee of the Whole Amendment.
Question, question, question.
Question having been called, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1, has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Miller.
I don't see anyone at the podium other than another Committee of the Whole amendment. So I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time, or we can go to the second reading amendment.
Representative Dave Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 119 and ask for your favorable consideration. As we were looking at the laws for the real estate world, we do have one problem happening through the state of Wyoming, and that's why I'm bringing you the definition of an auction. And what we're having are a lot of folks coming into the state, or some of them within the state, conducting auctions on real estate property without a real estate license. And we're having some techniques used as they are going up and actually doing the auction chant and getting right to the point and not saying sold. And then at that point, somebody from the real estate audience comes in and then goes over to the particular high bidder and gets them to sign a contract on it. One thing you want to be very aware of. On my amendment, I'm also including the ring men. So I don't know if you ever flip channels when you're bored. I know you haven't been able to do that the last couple of months. But sometimes you can see on TV on the car auctions, and what you will see are the ring men do most of the work with the buyers. The auctioneer's up there just chanting away, but the ring men are down there shoulder to shoulder with potential buyers, possibly giving them information, sometimes maybe misinformation, encouraging them to bid a little higher. So they are included in this amendment, and I wanted you to be aware of that. The second half of the amendment just addresses a little higher violation for those who violate the law, and a reason of that is because to get your real estate license, it's 30 hours of continuing education or more. I should say more, excuse me. But it involves like a week's worth of time. So we don't want it to be easier to get the fine than it is to get the education. And with that, I would stand for any questions on the amendment.
Are there any questions? Representative Miller.
Call for the question. Have no problems with this amendment.
The question having been called, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 2 has passed. We are back on the bill. Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3, and I also move to divide the amendment between lines 11 and 12. We'll make 1 through 11, Division 1, and 12 through 18, Division 2.
You think that's divisible? The chair rules that that's divisible. Representative Esquivel.
Okay, on Division 1, what we're looking at here is the number of hours that a broker has to take for his license, and that's 60 hours, and that we're requiring that 4 of those hours be in the ethics area. And on page 28, line 15, under the salesman license, we're requiring that 2 of those 30 hours be in the area of ethics. And folks, what I've learned is, you know, with the housing crisis these days.
Point of order. Mr. Chairman, it's fine what he's doing, but he has to divide line 2 out also.
Representative Esquivel?
Oh. Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Thank you, Representative Illaway.
That is part of Division. That's part of Division 2, correct? Lines 1 through 2 is part of Division 2, and lines 12 through 18, part of Division 2.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that. And what I've learned is that with the housing industry the way it is, it's become a very competitive industry. And we want to make sure that all these rules and regulations and laws that we have are being abided by. These people choir, that their sales are their commissions, are their livelihood. So what I'm told is that they already do it at the local boards, but we're just putting this in there to make it a requirement within our state law. If I have, if there are any questions on that Division One, I'd call for the question.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I have two questions. The first one, my understanding, this is for people coming into the real estate field, so it'd be for new salespeople as compared to brokers. To be a broker, you have to have 2 years of being a salesman before you become a broker. But my other question is, if we require 2 hours for ethics and we have 30 hours of required to become a salesman, then which 2 hours are we going to throw out? Will it be in the finance section? Maybe you could elaborate if how that's going to work.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, they're already taking ethics. It's just not a state requirement. So at this point, it wouldn't come out of any other part of their licensing. So that they would take those 2 hours in the salesman, and then once they move up to being a broker or associate broker, then they would have to take 2 additional hours.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need to ask, what course of study is there that's available for 4 hours of instruction in ethics? Is there a syllabus on that?
Representative Esquivel.
I'll add that, Mr. Chairman. Their instructors are already teaching ethics, at least from what I know in the local boards. And actually, the local board here requires for the salesman to be 4 hours. So it just depends on the board that is overseeing them particular licenses at the local board. So up in your neck of the woods, those instructors are already doing it as well. I'm sure they're qualified to teach it, and it's a kind of a handbook like what we get for our ethics as well, you know. And then they go over the laws and the rules, and then when they're teaching those ethics classes, that they're being notified that, you know, by doing a real estate term, what they call going behind the signs. So where someone has a listing or has a buyer's contract, you know, that those contracts and those listings are belong to the broker, of course, but it's the salesman's commission that is how they get paid. So we're trying to make sure that, you know, we're not having any unethical behavior going on in this industry.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would speak against this particular amendment. My understanding is when you become an actual realtor and get the R sticker on your name, you actually have to go through 15 hours of continuing ethics classes. And as the fine sponsor just mentioned, that most of the ethics classes are already taught. And my other understanding is that when you're a new salesman coming in, you're required 30 hours of education. And so we have a problem about where we put these 2 hours in. But if we pass it, I'll look into it a little closer for a second reading amendment. Thank you.
Representative Patton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having done some of that continuing education work on behalf of the realtors, ethics as a subject doesn't have a syllabus all unto its own, but becomes a component part of the continuing education requirements. When we put into the statute that you're going to take approximately 6 hours out of the 15 hours of continuing education, it's as though you had a syllabus of material that defines ethics. And if there were such a thing that has been developed, that would be great. Other than that, it's really a part of the continuing education process. And I hate to say that, but I'd have to oppose this.
Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the answer to that is we're in the section in the statutes 3328-106 that talks about application for license, qualifications, sworn statement, commission approval of course of study, statement of broker, denial of license. And then it starts through all the things you have to do to become a responsible broker. And one of the things that you have to do to become a responsible broker is provide evidence that you've completed not less than 60 cumulative class hours in a course of study approved by the commission, given by instructors approved by the commission, and has satisfactorily passed an examination covering material taught in each course. And we do the same thing in CLE, continuing legal education, and the Bar Association in that case, the commission in this case is going to decide out of a syllabus or a continuing education course how much of that pertains to ethics. And they're going to count that up and say, okay, in this 60 hours, included in there is 4 hours of ethics. And so this makes them be sure that there's 4 hours of ethics embedded in that 60 hours of instruction. And then they've satisfied the requirement. And that's the way we do it with the continuing education for the Bar Association. And you see courses that are offered and says this course is so counts for so many hours, including so many hours of ethics. And it's going to be up to the commission to make the decision about whether the syllabus for the total instruction is sufficiently, has embedded in it sufficient ethics instruction or not.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for clarification. If the board can do this, can set their own parameters, couldn't they do this now, and are we mandating them? What if they only want 3 hours in ethics as part of the 60 hours because there's so much stuff you should learn? Or I guess if they want five, they can add on an additional hour. But I don't know a lot of sections of law where maybe we do mandate how many hours of instruction, whatever areas we must in legal education. But I think the board can do this, and they can set how many hours depending on the board's feelings. So I'm not sure why we would mandate that. But if you could explain that to me some more, get me comfortable with it, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Brown.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the answer to that is that the board could, it's true the board could set the number of hours. Statutorily, in some areas, we say, look, we want this minimum number of hours in there. And as far as how it displaces, it's just a minimum of 60 hours they have to teach. If they can't get it all taught, including 4 hours of ethics that's embedded inside of there in 60 hours, then maybe they have to go more hours. I don't know. The other thing we're told is that the real estate board is already doing this. However, there are some other ways to get a broker's license that don't necessarily include this ethics instruction. And for those people who are coming in through that stream, this would sort of level the playing field and bring them up to the same level of ethics embedded in their total course of instruction that people that are coming through the traditional channel are getting.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This group is policed by their own association and then also overseen by the commission. I think they're well equipped to make some of these decisions, but it's the will of the body whether you want to add this to the bill or not. So I'll stand back and let the body decide.
Okay, we are on Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 3, Division 1, which is essentially lines 3 through 11 of that amendment. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 3, Division 1 has failed. We are now on Division Number 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was easy. The sponsor will withdraw Division 2, and we'll go home.
Division number 2 has been withdrawn. Thank you all. Okay. Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Lockhart, Representative Stubson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill number 119 do pass. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate file 119 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Representative Lubna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 146, amended, and further amended, recommended, do pass. Representative Lubnow moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again. Senate File 9, amended, and further amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 62, recommended, do pass. Senate File 73, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 115, Representative Botten announced a conflict of interest on Senate File number 115, recommended, do pass. Senate File 55, recommended, do pass. Senate File 65, recommended, do pass. Senate File 10, amended, and further amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 119, amended, and further amended, and further amended, recommended, do pass. Signed, Representative Blickery, Chairman.
Representative Blickery.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 287. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 5, University Revenue Bond Supplemental Coverage. The House bill listed above passed on a third reading in the amended form that follows. Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, message 288. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 28, Child Protection, Shelter Care, and Initial Hearings. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 37, State Archive Storage Study. The House bill listed above passed the Senate on third reading. Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 63, Subdivisions Water Study. The House passed bill with amendments. Senate, Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Message number 291. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 69, Prescriptions for Marijuana, invalid. Ayes 27, noes 3. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 292. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 111, Public Works and Contracts. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 30, no 0. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 293. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 143, Manufacturing Tax Exemption. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 26, noes 4. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 294, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 153, Agricultural Gas Tax Refund Program. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form by the vote as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 295. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed above passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 157, Abolition of Worthier Title Doctrine. Ayes 26, noes 4. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 296. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 159, Uniform Trust Code Amendments. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 26, noes 4. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 297. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 160, Management Audit Committee Subpoena Power. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 298. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 13, Hathaway Success Curriculum. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 29, noes 1. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 299. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 74, Validity of Marriages. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 16, noes 14. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 300. Mr. Speaker, House Bill 110, Successor Corporation Asbestos-Related Liability Act 2. The House bill listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 23, noes 7. The Senate respectfully asks the House to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just wanted to let everybody know that I have plenty of mugs left if anybody wants them. I am not like the governor's mansion. I do not need my own personal set of 20 or 30 or 60 61st mugs. So come see me if you want more. And if you haven't paid me, I will find you.
We're at that order of business, reading and signing of enrolled acts. Senate House Enrolled Act number 27.
House Enrolled Act number 27, being original House Bill 28, an act relating to children, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Enrolled Act number 27, being original House Bill 28. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 28.
House Enrolled Act number 28, being original House Bill 69, an act relating to controlled substances, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 28, being original House Bill 69. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 29.
House Enrolled Act number 29, being original House Bill number 157, an act relating to property conveyances, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign enrolled Act Number 29, being original House Bill 157. I have so signed. House Enrolled Act 30.
House Enrolled Act Number 30, being original House Bill 160, an act relating to legislative oversight, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act 30, being original House Bill 160. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 38.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 38, being original Senate File Number 48, an act relating to the Wyoming Wildlife and Natural Resource Trust Account Board, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 38, being original Senate File 48. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 39.
Senate Enrolled Act Number 39, being original Senate File 108, an act relating to banks and banking, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign Enrolled Act Number 39, being original Senate File 108. I have so signed. You're going to do it now? Now? Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, may I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
Brothers and sisters of the 61st, as this is my last day with you, I just wanted to say a couple of things. One is I wanted to thank you all for all of your heartfelt words of support and stuff as my wife and I begin this big journey to grow our life through adoption and grow our family. We just couldn't be more excited about it. I was explaining, because someone said to me, oh, you must be so happy, you know, to be out of here. And I tried to explain it to my wife last night. And the way that I explained it is a way that I think all of you can understand. And I used the explanation of when I went to Thailand in May to train and fight, and we were 10 days into it, and my shins were black and blue from knee to ankle, and my body wanted to quit, and I was done, and I was spent. And it was over. And every time my head hit the pillow, I immediately fell asleep, and the alarm went off 2 seconds later. But you didn't leave because you loved it, and that is because it's rewarding. And that is my comparison when I say that what we all do here, and all of you can understand, because it's hard, and we drain ourselves, and we go home at the end of the day. But it's so rewarding to serve the people of Wyoming. And the other piece that's so rewarding is to sit with all of you here, because this is a family to me, and I really enjoy working with each and every one of you, even if I don't vote with you every time. I really enjoy every one of you. And I wanted to stick with two quick items in my absence. One is I would like to leave my proxy vote with Croker because I really like his style. And two is that I keep a running count on my desk. The Pedersen-Peasley family bond is decades old. And as we've known each other's families for quite some time. But I keep a running count for violations of Chapter 3 in the decorum and debate on Representative Peasley. It's at 22 right now for proper names, and it began 2 years ago with the amazing, what I'll call the speech. But I'll leave Jim Stubson in charge of that while I'm gone. But thank you all so much, and I look forward to sending you all photos of our family once it's complete. Thank you.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 100, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace, signed representing Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred Senate File 139, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Kraft, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. No, Gay, absent, Barbudo, Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Re-referrals, Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to re-refer Senate File 139 in Gross to your committee, Appropriation Number 2.
It's been moved for re-referral of Senate File 139 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Committee announcements. Your Committee Number 12, Rules, will meet upon adjournment Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011, to consider Senate File 69, Engrossed Revisers Bill, and Senate File 95, Legislative Committee Membership. Chairman Illoway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions will meet on Tuesday, February 22nd at 12 noon in House 18 to discuss joint interim topics.
Chairman Simlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources will meet Tuesday, February 22nd at 9 a.m. in Room H11 to discuss possible interim topics. And that same day, upon noon recess, Tuesday, February 22nd, the Joint Agricultural Committee will meet to discuss interim topics. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman McComey.
And, Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 6, Travel, will meet upon noon recess Tuesday in Room H10, where the Joint Committee will discuss interim topics, which means between the three of us, we're going to have a lot of different people that are on the same committees. So it'll be interesting to see them running back and forth.
Member Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 8, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment Tuesday, February 22nd, to discuss possible interim topics.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, will be meeting on Tuesday, the 22nd, at 9 a.m., to meet with some people from Health and Human Services for a training. The Labor Committee, Tuesday morning, 9 o'clock in the H-17.
Representatives Escobel and Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Proceed.
See the good Chairman of Minerals holding up our trophy. We want to thank everybody that wore red and pink today and remind you that we still have more forms. We want to keep our first place standing, so come and see us.
And Representative Ranish and Kasparik get the, and Moniz get the top awards for that. But especially Representative Ranish. I love that. Oh, yes. Committee announcements continued. Representative Pedersen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 2 will meet at 8:30 a.m. on Tuesday, February 22nd, Room 204.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good work this week. Ladies and gentlemen, we have 4 days of general file left. Right now there are 31 bills on general file. Be safe. Enjoy your family. Be prepared to spend some time on Tuesday. You will see on the general file list that all of the labor, health, and social services bills are at the bottom of the list. That is not because I hate labor, health, and social services bills, but because they will be off the floor for part of the day, so the chairman has asked those bills be moved down. Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011.
All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, no. The House is adjourned until Tuesday, February 22nd, 2011, 10 a.m.